This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation Wrestling Network fans, welcome back across the pond for episode number 18 of the most consistently inconsistent podcast across the quad of pods, The Special Relations, where preparation isn't necessary, but a fun time is all but guaranteed. And it is fitting that in the week that we are back, that we're back to the pubs and the beautiful game that we call football is trying its best to implode. Your favourite beer drinkers and football fans are here to entertain you this fine Saturday, Sunday, or whenever you choose to listen. Two men not imploding tonight, at least I hope not, are my excellent co-hosts. First off, we have a man who supports a team who may be the reason we almost had a European Super League, because, let's be honest, who wants to play on a cold Tuesday night in Stoke? He's the host of many variations of chicken salad on the wrestling feed and the pop feed, and well as the host of Telly and Tea with the wonderful Miranda. He is, of course, Ben Locke. Ben, good evening.
Evening, Callum. So that's me, Rory, Sean Kidd, Logan, Jacob. Anybody else for the Place to Be Nation and Super League boys? I'm just coming up with names. just give me a second. Yeah, we'll invite a few more in. They can make the numbers up.
But what's going to happen what's going to happen is all you guys won't be able to leave the feed, and then me and like JT and Scott could maybe come in sometimes when we'll drop out. Who knows?
Ah, okay.
Yes, Ben, good evening. How are you?
I'm all right. Just let everybody know, just in through the looking glass, we're recording this on a Wednesday night. I am so glad we're not recording this on a Tuesday night, gentlemen, because I think we've all got anger, we've all got things to say, but that situation last night, I was trying to work. I don't know how you guys were feeling with it, but it was like things are changing literally every minute. It was one of them. I was like, what is going on here?
It was bizarre. I flicked on Sky Sports News, completely forgetting there was actually a full card of football, including my very own Airdrie in a very important game. And I just completely forgot because it was chaos.
And in reply to your little witty banter at me, Callum, just remember that according to that sign, plenty of Chelsea fans want a cold windy night in Stoke.
Well, cold windy nights in Stoke are their character building, and it is what you want to see, because cold winter nights in Stoke, I've seen even the biggest teams fall on many an occasion.
Yeah, quite a pleasant evening having a drink in Milan just doesn't cut it, I'm afraid.
No, I mean, I would rather be in Stoke than is there a place that was, no, actually not. I was going to say I'd rather be in Stoke than Seville, but Seville weren't invited.
Yes. We'll get on to that.
We'll get a witty chant started. Also joining us tonight is a man who would have opposed a Super League even 40 years ago, when his team would probably have been in it as they were about to win the league and conquer Europe. He is the host of Senior Video on the Wrestling Network, as well as discussing a simpler yet just as chaotic time in wrestling on the 20 Years Ago podcast. He is, of course, the podcast legend, Rory McNamara. Rory, good evening. How are you?
I'm very well. Good evening to all our legacy fans out there. Throw you a quick bone while we can.
We don't
really want everybody, not really, but we got up. Was it 40% of people don't? 40% of young people don't listen to wrestling podcasts or whatever it is? I don't know.
That's it.
Some of the absolute nonsense that was coming out of her mouth was truly bizarre. And then you get, I mean, It's easy to blame the fact that they're foreign owners, right? I've got nothing against foreign owners normally, but it's the fact that they just, it's not that they don't get the culture, they're just totally tone deaf. It's for things like that. It's like 40% of younger people don't understand what football's like and legacy fans and all that shit. I think it's just, yeah.
They just misread the room. Totally and utterly misread the room. We were going to discuss it later, but we might as well just go straight into it, because it's going to be the subject on all our minds, isn't it? Yeah. So let's just get it out of the way, because you know
haven't actually mentioned what it is yet. I think for the uninitiated, which is probably 98% of the people listening to this, and you don't know how old you are, that we explain what it is we are actually talking about here. Ben, as so often the case on these shows, take it away, my man.
Okay, so the rumours started on Sunday afternoon. And the rumours started that a number of clubs, we weren't sure the exact number at the time, a number of the so quote-unquote big clubs around Europe were planning a breakaway Super League. That's what they were describing as, with no promotion and no relegation, invite only. So it doesn't matter how shit you did in the season before, you were in this league no matter what. So rather than, I can only speak for what it's like in this country. I think it's the same in most of Europe. The top club, you know, the money in the game trickles down from the top tier all the way down through the pyramid system, through the youth, you know, to the non-league and youth system. And all that was going to go. All that was going to go because these, as it turned out, 12 clubs wanted to keep everything for themselves. They tried and painted it like, oh, we want to stay in our domestic leagues as well, which is just having your cake and eating it. They wanted to say that we're going to invite 5 clubs that invite only. And I don't know if you guys picked up on that bit. That was the bit that really actually pissed me off. Well, I say more than anything else, pissed me off at the time more than most things, because those clubs that were invite only, if you win the league, you only get about 5% of the money compared to what the actual, you know, founder clubs get. And the teams that have made up these founder clubs. So you've got AC Milan. Haven't been in the Champions League for 5-6 years. You've got Spurs. Spurs, everybody. A team that, let's go with just the Premier League, since that's been in existence since 1992. They've won as many titles as Stoke have, which is nothing. Aston Villa have, which is nothing. They've won as many cups and titles as Blackburn, who have won one league. As Leicester City, they have won one league. The whole system in this country and throughout Europe is, it gives people hope. Leicester City, you might be aware, won the league 5-6 years ago. And that was, even if you're not a Leicester fan, you were so happy for them, and you wanted them to do it because, like I say, it gave everybody hope. And you can tell by the way my voice is raised and how angry I'm getting, even now, that the idea has been kiboshed. It still winds me up and gets me angry, because this ain't going away. This ain't going away. These guys, let's not be naive to think, oh, because, you know, they've rejected it this time, they're not going to try and come back with something else. They are. They're going to come back. They're going to try and come back with something else. They are coming back. They'll be coming back from a position of their power has been rescinded greatly because of it. I'm cutting into everybody else's time, and I'm sorry, but I'm quite passionate on this, as you can tell. I think the head cheerleaders were the president, what's the president's name in Madrid? I've totally forgot his name off the top of my head.
Florentino Perez.
That's it, Perez. And Aguilera, Juventus, and our English friends, well, I say English friends, our American friends from the FSG group, Stan Kroenke and the Glazers. They are trying to force an American franchise model into our country, and it's not going to work. It's not a Johnny Foreman xenophobe thing. It's just not going to work, and it never will work. The whole basis of our footballing system both in England and throughout Europe, is the pyramid system that gives teams, you know, you get risk and reward. You get rewarded for doing well. You get, you know, punished for doing badly. All that goes with this Super League. And all they are doing it for, everybody says, oh, they're doing it for the money, which they are. But why are they doing it for the money? It's because they are in such fucking crippling debt that they've got to do this. They have, it's almost a desperate throw of the dice. And by doing it, because by doing it, all they've done is strengthen UEFA's position. UEFA and FIFA are no safe. We're having a World Cup in fucking Qatar, for God's sake. So we're not even pretending that they are saints and, you know, the last bastions of football. We aren't. But compared to these charlatans, absolute charlatans, I mean, you want to describe them, charlatans, jamokes, cockstains, penises. You know, they don't know a damn thing about football. They own these clubs. They treat these clubs like toys. And I don't know, we know people who, you know, a good friend of ours, Matsuza, lives in Boston. He's told us all about the FSG. He knows exactly, you know, he knows exactly what they were. And he was telling us stuff, wasn't he, Callum, before we even told him what was going on. So it's not new.
Yeah, it was. He saw the quote unquote apology, and I'm loath to say it was an apology, because it was so disingenuous from John Henry. It was so disingenuous, you could see right through it. And at the end of it, you got the overriding theme of it was it's the fans' fault for not wanting this.
Yeah.
And Ben, you kept talking about the pyramid system. For those who don't know, the pyramid system is, in most countries, especially in Europe, but in most countries around the world, the three of us could start a team just now. We could start a Place to Be Nation team just now and start at the very, very bottom.
Special Relations FC would be awesome.
Special Relations FC, we could start, the three of us could start the Special Relations Football Club and start at the very bottom of this pyramid. And I think in England it goes all the way down to 23 tiers, and there is thousands of teams. But if you start in tier 23, there is a way that you could eventually get to tier 1 and win the league and be the champions of England. So with the promotion and relegation model, and it's not a done thing in North America, and that's fine. That's because we've got the culture of the pyramid system, and North America have the culture of not, and the franchise model, which there's nothing wrong with that, because the franchise model itself has inherent benefits to it as well.
Yeah, and the key benefit that the franchise system has that this system did never had is the franchise system has a salary cap, mm-hmm. and the franchise system lets all the best players, or the best young players, I should say, go to the worst teams. Through a draft system.
Yeah,
so there's none of that here.
That is parity.
There's none of that here. There's quote-unquote parity.
Yes, there's meant to be parity where you've got a guy coming out, you've got this will go over Rory's head because he's not an NFL fan, but you've got Trevor Lawrence coming out of college who, from the limited amount I've seen, the guy looks great. And he's going to go to Jacksonville, who had the worst record last year, and the best player in college is going to go to the worst team in the professional leagues. And that's what makes the franchise model work. But it's not what it's used to in Europe, and it was just seen as a power grab. And I know Rory, speaking of charlatans, we'll go from one to another, and we'll go to Rory because you have got some, you out of the three of us, I've had the strongest opinion on it, and which is saying a lot, because myself and Ben have had very strong opinions. But I think it's time for a famed and quite this one could be quite ferocious Rory's rants.
First off, thank you, North Country boy.
Yeah. Oh, hey, there we go.
Okay, so what the boys have talked about there, that's what happened on Sunday. I don't think we actually said, so I'll just fill in. Well, say to call this a fast-moving story would be quite an understatement. And I'm barely exaggerating when I said that is everything that happened between 11 and 12 p.m. on Sunday night. What has happened? Clubs one by one have been shamed into running away from this and issuing grovelling apologies. As Ben has rightly alluded to, the outcry, the universal outcry from fans on this idea. And there was no way. Here we are, only recording this on Wednesday. Not even 3 days, not even 72 hours after the news first dropped. And the league, at least in its planned form, is now dead. And I'm very happy to say that. So what do I think about it? I did actually say, when we, Ben rightly said, I'm giving you a lot of praise today, Ben, despite you slagging off. I'm partially forgiving. You said we had to talk about this. You were quite right. You were absolutely right that we did have to talk about this. But I admit I was reluctant to do so for two reasons. Number one, knowing our listener base as we do, that it might not be an especial hot topic for them. And of course, always with the references we drop, always have our listener base in mind. the fact that, you know, I'm trying to, you know, make it as lighthearted as we can. It's a very, not dark, you know, compared to other things in life, especially news you've heard this week. It's not dark at all, but it's a very saddening topic for me. And I thought, well, I don't really want to discuss it, but it is the only game in town in this country at the moment. And we try to bring a flavour of the UK to you every month. So our hands are tied. And I think the boys there have summed up the greed, the selfishness and the response extremely well. But Ben said something there, and he's absolutely right. This is not the end. This is really only the beginning of the second chapter. And this has been coming for the last 30 years. Football now in this country in 2021 is utterly unrecognisable from where it was 30 years ago when I, as an 8-9-year-old, first started watching it. In the days of the old league, Division One. And all of that, you'd have 10 live games a season, if you were lucky, league games. The coverage wouldn't even start until the middle of October. There was no weekly highlights program. This was the first season I started watching in full, 1991, 1992, the final season before the Premier League began. And we'll see where the game has come in those 30 years. Yes, there have been many, many changes for the better. Now, to be a football fan is no longer to be a pariah in society. Thank goodness. Football fans now are quite a little more respected than they were 30 years ago. Okay, admittedly, a lot of them misuse that respect, but that's a discussion for another day. Now, you don't feel like a member of the great unwashed to say that you go to football these days. But so much that made the game, you know, I fell in love with as a young boy has disappeared now. And it is, first and foremost, a money-making venture. A lot of the great competitions that I used to love watching Wednesday night highlights of on Sports Night have fallen by the wayside. No UEFA Cup, now replaced by the Europa League, but why did I even mention that? No Cup Winners' Cup. The Champions League, which is what started all of this for Argo. Mid-90s, I think, what a year we might be talking about later. First became open for the sides who finished first and second in their respective domestic league, rather than just first. Then it extended to the top three. Then it extended to the top four. And with all of that and all the money that came from that, all the Champions League TV deals, the Premier League Sky deals going up every 3 or 4 years, more and more and more and more obscene amounts of money. And league domestic football now in this country, very few games, and I sound like an old man shouting at cloud, but it's true. Very few games kick off Saturday, 3 p.m. If you're not a member of the Elite Six, maybe Everton as well, or Leicester, then what's your one goal when you start the season in August? You know, to put 10 men behind the ball, maybe sneak the odd one away from home here or there. Maybe only restrict yourself to 7 or 8 defeats at home and try and finish 17th. So you haven't got to worry about parachute payments for at least another season. You can just recoup the TV money, whatever the prize money is, for finishing 17th. Even that these days, I don't even know what the figure is for finishing directly outside of the relegation zone, one place away from being relegated. I don't even know how much it is, but it's an eye-watering amount. And the There's the famous quote from Danny Blanchflower, 1960, I think it's from, where he said, "No, the game is about glory." And I say that was 60 years ago, but it really isn't about glory anymore. And as much as I was revulsed by the news that dropped on Sunday about the Super League, and my heart was warmed by all the fan protests, everybody putting aside their rivalries, none of the petty squabbles, none of the whataboutery, everybody was united. This was fantastic to see, but there's two things I couldn't and can't shake from my head. Number one, if we could all come together for something like this, why can't we all come together to try to stamp out racism in football? One example. And secondly, when people say that, oh, this is them stealing the game from us, to use a cliche phrase, the game's already gone. The formation of the Premier League started this. Sky bidding 304 million, then 600 million, then 900 million, then 3 billion for the TV rights. That took the game from you. The FA Cup final not kicking off on Saturday at 3 p.m. That took the game from you. I could go on, but for the sake of our listenership, maybe I will. Maybe I'll get a bit more specific on this on another forum on another day. But I'm very glad that the Super League has, at least in its current form, been seen off. But this does not mean that the soul of football has suddenly been returned to it. That's long, long gone, I'm afraid. And it ain't ever coming back.
No. And I think the thing about it is that, yes, it's gone. It's gone tits up less than 2 days after it started, or less than a week after it started. But a lot of people, the three of us included, they still did it. They still tried to do it, and that is something that will take a lot of time to recover from. The three of us, I know that Arsenal are my English team, but I've got no lifelong affiliation with Arsenal. I started watching Arsenal. I support Arsenal for the same reason that I support the New York Giants in the NFL. I watched them on the first time when I started properly watching football when Arsenal played. Arsenal were the reason why you thought it was called the beautiful game, because they played absolutely stunning football. But I've got no affiliation from them. So even the fact that Arsenal are in, I don't want to watch Chelsea or Manchester United or Liverpool. Or I watched Liverpool game last night hoping that it would get royally stuffed by Leeds United. I don't want to watch. I'm really at the point that I don't want to watch these teams just now. We've got a cup final coming up on Sunday. I'll not put it on. I've got no want, especially Tottenham Hotspur, and especially Man United and Liverpool. And City and Chelsea, you're hearing reports that they didn't want to do it. They felt that they get strong-armed into do it. Well, do you know what? Don't do it. I always used to have a fondness for Manchester City, because you see what the owners have done. And yes, they've pumped a lot of money into that team, but they've done a lot for the local. They have done a lot of local stuff for the local community, because the part of Manchester the Etihad in is, for all intents and purposes, a shithole. They've done a lot to regenerate it, and they've done a lot for the community. But all it took was for Manchester City to say no. They don't need any more money. Sheikh Mansour doesn't need any more money. The same way that the Paris Saint-Germain owner said no, because he doesn't need any more money, and he doesn't need any of the hassle. And Roman Abramovich didn't need any more money, and that's why they weren't overly on board with it, but they still said yes.
I actually think, in a weird way, if they had said no, we'd still be talking about, the idea would still be in play now.
Well, because they were the first two to go.
They did, you know, rightly or wrongly, and we can talk about owners. We'll talk about the owners in a minute, but they never wanted end of the day. They just didn't want to be left at the station. That was the issue. And I think if they knew now that Bayern Munich and Paris Saint Germain weren't going to be in it, they would never have gone in it. They were probably sold by Perez that, you know, we have got everybody in this.
Yeah, that's a good call.
You've got, and people like Florentino Perez, and the,
as we, sorry, you, sorry, sorry, sorry. as we talk now, you've still got three teams left in it. You've still got, you know, Real Madrid is still in it, Barcelona is still in it, and Juventus are still in it. They haven't withdrawn.
Yeah, they're the three teams.
The idea is still on the table.
They're the three teams that don't have a penny to rub together.
Exactly. But
the whole reason, Barcelona, for somehow one of the biggest clubs in the world, are on the verge of bankruptcy. Real Madrid are trying to redevelop their stadium, and they have not got a pot to piss in just now.
Yeah.
They are absolutely.
When you give,
they are broke.
When you give Gareth Bale, I'm going to use an example, a 6-year contract to pay him £600,000 a week. You're going to be pissing all your money away. I'm sorry. No amount of shirt sales is going to cover that.
And I don't care. I mean, it's very nice seeing Messi, and it's very nice seeing Ronaldo, and I have been fortunate enough to see both of them play live. But the last game I watched on telly was Paris Saint-Germain against Bayern Munich in the Champions League last week. And it was a wonderful game of football to watch. Both legs were wonderful to watch. And you know what? I'd watch it again. See if UEFA want to make that the Champions League final this year. Brilliant. I'd watch it again.
So here's a statement I'm going to make right now. I think they have vastly overrated or overthought the value of Champions League football, of European football.
Most of the games you watch are pish.
I barely watch it because most of the games are quote-unquote pish or shite.
Yeah. I watched that game and I thought it was excellent. The last game that I went to live before COVID was, here's one for the listeners, Dumbarton 0, Airdrie 0. And it was January 2020. It was absolutely thrown it down with rain and I took no enjoyment. But do you know what? I was in a tiny crowd in a stadium with only one stand that can hold maybe 2,500 people at most, but it was my team I was watching. The sooner that people like Florentino Perez and Andrea Agnelli, even though, well, he's not there anymore, John Henry and people like that, see, the sooner they realise that the be-all and end-all isn't these 12 teams, they're not the be-all and end-all of football, then that's the only way that we can go forward, and that is never, ever going to happen.
I know Rory's quite, you know, got a stronger opinion of this than I have, but you know, the voice the commentators and pundits have given in these last few days, you know, they are working for multi-billion-pound companies, and we get that, but you've kind of got to admire them at the same time for speaking out, and because I was right where Rory was, you know, there's a guy over here called Gary Neville. He's a former Manchester United and England fullback, and he works for Sky. And he's been basically slagging everybody off to Kingdom Come. But rightly or wrongly, when you're doing that in front of a Sky microphone, it kind of takes the impact away a bit. I get that. But he said something and it stuck with me. He said, I've been complicit too. And as soon as he said that, I was like, I'm on board now, Gary. I'm on board now. And I don't know if you guys saw it last night, because the other bit after the Chelsea game last night, and it wasn't Gary Neville, it was Graeme Souness who said it. What these owners have done, they've maxed out Europe now. They've got to find a new cash stream. So whether, you know, through Asia, through North America, wherever it is, they need to find that cash stream because they've maxed out Europe.
Oh, it's true. There's no more money to be made from the Champions League in their minds. I mean, it's still astronomical sums. But even now, the Champions League, and we can't forget this, UEFA only announced it yesterday, the Champions League has been rigged heavily in the big club's favour for 20 years.
Oh, God, yes.
With this, God, what, you know, talk about a C word, hated word in UEFA football, coefficient. God, just gives me the fucking creeps. But it means that most of these clubs, even if they did finish outside of the top four, they would still be effectively invited to play in the Champions League anyway by some nonsensical technicality that I'm not going to get into here. So the Champions League is already there for them. But as Ben and Graham Souness agree on,
Graham.
There's no fresh money to be made in the Champions League now. It's selling shirts in Malaysia and doing closed off photo shoots in Melbourne and what have you. And I say that's where the game is, and it's what it exists for these owners and the fans, whether they like it or not. Now, they are unwilling or unwitting, I'll leave you to decide, accomplices in this. There's something else I want to say as well about this, that all the names we've dropped so far in the last half an hour, I know, you know, just ticking off your reference sheets at home. I've got another one I'm sure you were hoping I was going to mention. Peter Knowles. Okay, there you go. Peter Knowles. Very few of you who don't know, right? He played for Wolves in the 1960s, and he was a bit of a hot prospect. Was talked about being one of the first names on the team sheet for England's 1970 World Cup squad when England went to defend the World Cup in Mexico. In 1967, also, it's a little fact with Peter Knowles. Here's one for you, just to really date this. Guys, quick quiz question. He was the first footballer in England to be what? Very quickly. Quick guess.
Oh, buzz. Substituted.
Right time frame, not quite.
Oh.
That was Keith Peacock.
Oh, buzz. Come on as a substitute.
No. I would have given you that. No. Ben, anything?
It's not sent off. That was a few years before, wasn't it?
I will say this, you're on the right lines.
Ooh, okay.
I'm tempted to give you half a point for that.
Was he the first person to be sent off, but actually not on the pitch?
I'm gonna give you half a point. He was the first player to be booked for dissent. There you go.
Oh. Ah.
Only became a bookable offence in the 66-67 season.
Okay.
Well, there you go. Anyway, yeah. So, other than that, say, really hot prospect, and out of nowhere in 1967 he quit football to become a Jehovah's Witness. And then a few weeks afterwards he was interviewed, I think it was for Newsnight or Panorama or something like that, I think it was Panorama, and he turned around and said the two reasons he gave up football to become a Jehovah's Witness were, number one, he couldn't live with the shame of possibly one day breaking another player's leg, and secondly, remember this was 1967, he said he didn't want to play football anymore because it's just all about big business. And that was in 1967. This was only 6 years after the abolition of the maximum wage, for goodness sake. And seems a very long time ago and far more innocent days. Now, when the Kinks sang in Autumn Almanac, I go to football on a Saturday, roast beef on Sunday, I go to Blackpool for my holidays. That time in 1967 is the time they were describing. And somebody even then, you know, saw the destination that the gravy train was heading. And sadly, one-way ticket, and it ain't never coming back.
Speaking of 1967, half of this country that I call home will always talk about 1967.
I should have thought about that.
It was the year that Celtic won the European Cup. Celtic won the European Cup with the first British team to win the big trophy.
And Lions.
Uh-huh. And
didn't finish yet.
Never been allowed to forget it since. But they were the first British team to win it, and they're not deemed good enough to be a British team in the European Super League. But they're the manager that won it that night, Jock Stein, who famously said, "Football without fans is nothing." And over on Sunday night, the European Super League 12, the ESL 12 almost, well, they have found that out to their detriment. They almost found out that they were almost about to be playing football without fans just to satisfy the pockets of a little man in Madrid.
Yeah, but we've got to say this is a owner's thing. This isn't a slagging off of the club's things. Is it this? Because there are genuine, hardworking people at all 12 of those clubs. This is 12 people/groups, however you want to phrase it, who are trying to line their pockets up. And in a couple of cases, it's a last desperate roll the dice because they are up shit streak financially. But because they are at Real Madrid and Barcelona and Juventus, they've actually got a name, and that name has value. And let's not be naive. Football without risk and reward is just content. It's just content for a streaming service somewhere. They'll already have got DAZN or Amazon or somebody behind them, and they'll come back with something. They'll come back with something. I'm convinced of that.
But you've got guys who are just, so you've got John Henry, who Matt Souza will tell you has done no end of detriment to the Boston Red Sox. They traded away their best player last year because they didn't want to, they didn't want to give him a bigger contract. You've got Stan Kroenke, who says, who I don't ever, I think might be a mute. I have never heard the guy say a word in the whole time he's been at Arsenal. He was the guy who famously didn't believe his own team would get to the NBA playoffs, so took the rent money from the WWE to rent the building in Denver for Raw, and then couldn't fulfil it because his team got to the playoffs. He was happy for the quick buck. He wasn't going to get money from St. Louis. Ask fans, if there's anyone in St. Louis who was a Rams fan, ask them what they think of Stan Kroenke. The guy was putting his team out to the highest bidder, and LA happened to say, let's go, we'll give you all this money, we'll give you a brand new stadium, and he's like, fucking right, you will, here we go. off to LA go, because all he cares about is the fucking Yankee dollar, and these guys, it's got nothing to do with Arsenal Football Club, it's got nothing to do with Liverpool Football Club, it's got nothing to do with Manchester United or anybody like that, it's all got to do with the owners and their pockets.
Two more things on this before we wrap. Number one, Callum, thank you for not mentioning England 2, Scotland 3 from 1967. I thought that's where you were going with that one.
Oh, no, no, not at all. Not at all. But now that you bring it up, I mean...
See, I've won. Exactly. Damn it. Finish up. Well, I fear that one day in the future we will be coming back to this topic. Guys, what would be or what should be the punishment? Or indeed, what will it be, if indeed there will be one at all?
I think you've probably hit the nail on the head that there won't be a punishment.
Go on.
I think the only suitable way to do it would be the Premier League aren't going to kick them out because that's their cash cow, these big six. But I think UEFA have got enough about them that they might ban them from Europe for bringing the game into disrepute.
I think in the short term, I'm definitely with Callum. I don't think the Premier League will do anything. They never actually wanted to leave the Premier League. It was all Europe and Champions League, wasn't it? They never actually said we want to leave the Premier League. That would have been the end result, but they never actually came out and said that. So I think short term, if the split had been say 2-2, so it'd have been like two ESL clubs, two non-ASL clubs, they'd have just banned the two. But the split is actually 3-1, isn't it? So are UEFA going to get rid of the Champions League final? Probably not. They both need each other. What I think's going to happen is, I don't think there's going to be much in the way of punishment, you know, fines and bans. I don't think it's going to be anything like that. It's going to be legislation and sanctions, because this is something that's involved the UK government. I would imagine it's something that's involved the Italian government and the Spanish government. You know, I'm going to mention it again. Gary Neville and people like him have been calling for this independent body, this independent regulator. I think as a result of this, that's definitely going to be happening. No doubt about that. And I don't see us going to the German model, but I do see some kind of leaning that way, if that makes sense. Like, you know, I don't see the full 51% ownership thing coming in, but I definitely see a thing where these people have had their power greatly reduced by this, greatly reduced. And I think the Premier League and the British government will do some legislation and sanctions where they will not even be allowed. Well, they can think it, but they won't be allowed to do it. That's where I think it will go.
What about yourself, Rory?
Yeah. I mean, the noises that have been made by the British government this week, Boris Johnson saying he's going to drop a legislative bomb. Well, it should be said he did say that before all the English clubs actually pulled out. I do think that threat was enough to spook them, possibly even more than listening to the fans. Now, they didn't want to be sanctions that they had no way of getting out on. I will be very interested to see what the review, which is being led by the Conservative MP Tracy Crouch, comes out with. I think, though, that's probably going to take some time, probably a good 6-12 months until we see the results of that. Whether that will mean a move in this country towards the German model, where fans get the final voting right, anything that happens to their club, I'm not going to sit too tight about that one, but, you know, we can live in hope. What punishment the clubs are going to get, I'm There's no way it's saying, oh, 3 for 3, the FA Premier League, let's give them their full title. They are not going to kick them out of that. You know, Sky Sports and BT Sport will be onto them like a ton of bricks. And they know who pays the piper, because that's what it's all about, I keep coming back to. So that's not going to happen. I would love for UEFA to really just slip them the sly one and ban them from European competition. So you thought you were getting this super duper all singing, all dancing one. Now you're not even getting ours. That would be, I think the word is schadenfreude. But I can't look beyond it just being meaningless fines, I'm afraid, or a transfer ban that won't amount to a hill of beans with these clubs anyway. Because, you know, look at the size of their squads. I mean, Barcelona buying up squad players for 80, 85 million and paying them 200,000 a week to rot in the reserves. You know, it's part of the reason they are in the financial situation they're in anyway. That is not going to hurt them. But I fear that's all it's going to be. And people have talked about, in the, you know, the FIFA stepping in maybe and ensuring that the clubs are relegated. That's not going to happen. And FIFA aren't going to touch Barcelona, because you need to talk about the English clubs. We need to think about Barcelona, Real Madrid as well. Juventus, they're not going to be touched. They wield too much power, debt or no debt. So I fear that it's going to be the equivalent of a tap on the wrist. And then 4 or 5 years' time, we're back having this same discussion again.
And the more I think about it, I think you're probably right. I think they'll just roll over and have their bellies tickled. Because given, and you mentioned it earlier on, but given the derisory punishment, I say punishment, the quote-unquote punishment handed down to the Slavia Prague player and the Glenn Kamara incident, and then having Glenn Kamara get 30% of that ban himself for defending himself against racist abuse, I feel that they'll just... Their priorities are all wrong. All right, they might just get away with it. But yeah, I would like to see. And somebody pointed it out yesterday. Everyone was really quick to be up in arms when UEFA were really quick to get statements out about these guys leaving the competition because it was going to hurt their pocket. But it took them 3 weeks to deal with the Glenn Kamara incident.
Yeah.
Yeah. Something's got to change more than the Super League. Something has drastically got to change. Whole scale reform. Do you know what? Scrap UEFA and start again. That might be the only, that genuinely might be the only way that we get some movement on it. But yes, good chat, gentlemen, and we will now welcome back the wrestling fans. onto the thing. We might need to put a wee timestamp on, given that we've been recording for 45 minutes already. We might need to put a wee timestamp in the show description.
I'm not sure how much we're going to discuss in the next half an hour anyway, but there will be a little bit, everybody, maybe towards the end.
Rory, you might want to put a wee thing at the front just to say we unscheduled talk for 45 minutes about the round ball game, skip to 45 minutes to hear the show proper. So
hand over to you again, Mister, for a feature you dangled tantalisingly in front of our listener base a couple of months ago. And now we're going to die. So, what are we doing?
Yeah, so we basically came up with it. Well, I say we came up with this idea like about in January about the fact that obviously we're in 2021 now, and it's 25 years obviously since the year of 1996, which is a year of great change, both in terms of the graps, as Callum likes to say, and pop culture. And we wanted to sort of reminisce about both things, but then like real life and Royal Rumbles and WrestleManias happened, and we kind of put it on the back burner. So we thought we'd bring it back tonight for a nice sort of half an hour sandwich of our wrestling chat to bring everybody back in.
I think it's a good idea to bring everyone back in. I mean, we had heavy pop culture in the first one, away from the pop experience feed. Although, Andy, if you are listening, you know, that might be a wee pilot for you. Yes, yeah, just an unscheduled pilot. And we'll touch upon the 1996 pop culture and, of course, in the graps.
I had to call it the graps because, you know, you introduced that word to me, so I thought I had to bring it back in.
I can't remember the first time I heard it, but I thought that's a keeper. That is a keeper.
So we're only going to be doing the first three or four months of 96. We're not going to delve into the whole year because, frankly, we've already been talking, as has been mentioned, for about 45 minutes. So
yes. So 1996. So the things that happened in 1996. Well, Manchester United won the Premier League that year.
Did they? You can't win anything with kids.
Properly. No. I know.
Not Ben. Just we're trying to get them back.
No. Oh yeah. Sorry.
We don't. Not another reference we have to explain, please.
Tottenham Hotspur won the square root of fuck all again. So where should we start, Jen? So we start on sport, or should we start on music, or should we start? Should we just start on the graps? I mean, where would you like to take us?
Personally, I don't know how you two feel. I would start with the graps because we've sort of we've been talking about sport for a while now. And yeah, we need to calm our blood pressure down a bit.
That's probably a very good idea. So. And we'll bear in mind, 1996 was a big year in the squared circle, but only the first half, so January, February and March. So, I mean, as with every January, you start, unfortunately not with Sold Out, but a lesser regarded show, the Royal Rumble. Which I quite liked the 96 Rumble.
I mean, it's got that god awful like half hour main event going on, but the rest of the show is pretty good.
God awful or highly regarded, depending who you talk to. If you're a Bret Hart or Undertaker fan, then it's wonderful. If you're not a Bret Hart or Undertaker fan, then it's pretty dire.
Well, yeah, but I am a fan, but I do find it pretty dire. I'm sort of a mix of the two.
Fair enough. But I thought overall it's the Royal Rumble as well, where Steve Austin makes his a great impression on Vince McMahon by accidentally getting eliminated from the Royal Rumble at the wrong time. Whatever happened to that guy?
Rory might correct me. Is this the first Rumble where they played music?
Yes, it is.
Right. I mean, that's just such a simple idea. Like, you know, why did it take them 7 years to come up with that? And also, I'd be remiss of me not to mention Mr. Perfect on commentary. He is fantastic.
Would you say he was perfect?
No. Oh, God, he did it.
Yes, I did.
But it was also the first year of the free. It was the first free for all,
right?
That night,
between, I
can tell you without, because it was my next point. It's between the Triple H and Duke the Dumpster Drosy,
indeed,
to get the right to be number 30 in the Rumble, which I thought was a fantastic idea.
I agree too.
You know, yeah, and then, I don't know why they've not done that since.
With the loser getting number one.
I don't know why they've not done that since. I think that is a or have they done it since? Well, if they have, not often. But I think that is after. I think that is an excellent. I can't even get my words out. I think it's that good.
That's how good an idea it was.
I think so. Yeah, helps. Absolutely. Yeah, so we've got obviously we've got the Royal Rumble in January. We also have you've got the Tokyo 4th, the 4th of January Tokyo Dome Show. Easy for me to say. And you've got a House Party for ECW, which if you want more of ECW at that point. Listen to the Extreme Three Way Dance on the No So Wrestling, the No So Podcast feed. Jerry, JT, and Jad go through that one. That notable for the debut of one Rob Van Dam in ECW.
Hall of Fame Rob Van Dam.
Hall of Fame Rob Van Dam. Yes, I was going to say whatever happened to him. He went on the Hall of Fame and gave Matt Riddle.
Gave Matt Riddle some I would say tips, but you know.
Yeah, so very, very big happenings in January. So we've obviously got the Royal Rumble, and Shawn Michaels goes to the WrestleMania or Graps Mania.
I'll say this, right? So the thing that's most interesting about like 95, so you know, the end of 95 into it's just how different the product is even like 3 or 4 months later. It still looks the same, but it just feels different. You know, Raw is definitely going on that. You know, Nitro has basically made Raw go into that, you know, star versus star match thing. Where, you know, Raw before, you used to get one sort of star versus star match and then a whole load of squashes. Whereas, you know, coming out in 96, you were going into more, you know, like say star versus star rather than just taped awfulness, for lack of a better phrase.
Yeah, and it's subtle things as well. So you've got the Goldust character, which in and of itself was edgy and controversial, for want of a better word. But then you've got like Roddy Piper coming out, and Roddy Piper, unpredictable on the mic at the best of times, and they just have this wild brawl, which takes into account the OJ car chase for some reason, very hip and current at the time. OJ car chase at the time of WrestleMania 12, but there was small things that was, if that was the year before, they would have like fucking doink throwing pies at them, and Roddy Piper tries to run the man over. Very different.
Here's an example of what I mean. So like I've just brought up a random raw taping of January 29th, 1996. So early 96, very early 96. This is a three-match card for the hour. And you're getting Diesel versus the Bulldog, the Godwins versus the Bodyguard Donners, and Yokozuna versus Shawn Michaels. That's in an hour. I don't know what was on Nitro at that point, but that's just an example where, you know, you've gone from like pointless squash matches every week to that.
That's a big change.
You had I think it was the week after, you had Bret Hart Undertaker world title rematch.
Give me a second. I'm here. Give me a second.
Lame double DQ, but you're not getting Bret Hart versus The Undertaker on Raw.
No. Even
3 months before that.
You are of course you are correct, Mr. McNamara. How could I ever doubt you?
Yeah. You think I might have tackled this time period before?
I was going to say, sir. So obviously you have great experience of going through this time period. You would have lived it yourself because you're watching week to week and month to month. I can't remember, given that it's like 5 years ago now, but I can't remember. Were you part of the Wrestling 20 Years Ago crew at this point? So you would have lived this. So did you notice the change that Ben was talking about?
Yeah, you can definitely see that. I'm still not absolutely certain how. It was definitely a conscious change, without a doubt. I'm still not sure how much of it was a reaction necessarily to what was going on at Nitro at the time. Maybe slightly more than Vince at the time, or maybe even now, would care to admit. But the presentation was clearly far different. I mean, you talk about Goldust there, the Razor Goldust brawl that spills outside into the snow. You know, and Razor is absolutely demolishing him. That was right at the end of 95, I think, into early 96. Again, that would never have happened just 2 or 3 months before. And it does take a while, and just to jump ahead of our mini timeline here, I find it strange that they're definitely edging up the presentation, the Goldust stuff, Warrior dropping S-bombs and all of that. And then in a couple of months' time, they go back to the likes of Freddie Joe Floyd and T.L. Hopper and The Goon, as if Vince had one more last hurrah for the cartoon before finally giving up. But we can probably talk about that more in a couple of months' time. But it's definitely there, if you can look past the fact that the guy they were pushing to be their number one babyface was a male stripper.
Some would have you believe that he was a male stripper, yes, because he was posing in girly magazines, quote unquote, Mr. Bret Hart, 1996. Is that what you called him?
Sean, again, we'll probably talk about this more when we get back to this in a couple of months, but I can see why Sean didn't necessarily take after he won the belt, because, you know, he's a male stripper. You know, a white meat baby faced male stripper who has Hans Molman accompanying him to ringside everything. don't sit back and count the money. You won't be there for long.
I mean, I'm looking here at Super Brawl 6, and, you know, so what was going on the other side? So you got Public Enemy versus the Nasty Boys. You got Johnny B. Bad versus DDP. Harlem Heat versus Sting and Lex Luger. The Infamous Booker Man match, of course, which molds, obviously, it's Taskmaster and Arn Anderson.
And his chino shorts.
That's correct. Flair and Savage. And I want to say one of Hogan's last appearances before he had his little sabbatical and went away for a while against the Giant. I'm sure Rory might correct me on that.
This is Super Brawl, yeah. You are missing out the glory of Uncensored for next month.
I was going to get there, but I said that's why I said one of.
Cover your ass, why don't you, Ben? Yes, one of his love. Okay, are you happy now?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, that's an event I didn't actually watch for the first time until I started the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. I mean, WCW at this time, and I just started watching pro wrestling. WCW very much not on my radar at this time.
Was
it on in the UK? Or was this the infamous German porn channel a German porn channel?
It was on TNT at the time, I think so.
TNT, yeah, Nitro was definitely on TNT, and then if you wanted to watch pay-per-view, you had to have your German sports channel of choice.
6 weeks after the fact, yeah.
Yes.
Ah, right, okay.
With Carsten Schaefer doing his commentary over it.
Oh, Carsten Schaefer, the old freelancer himself, yeah.
Carsten Schaefer gets himself around. Carsten Schaefer was the Rick Rude before his time.
Was it TNT or was it the Turner Movies channel over here?
No, it was TNT. Definitely TNT.
It was after Cartoon Network finished. So you had Cartoon Network finished at 9 o'clock.
I could be completely on this, but I don't think TNT went up until about 7 p.m. each evening over here. I'm sure it was just the movie channel over here, at least for a while. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong.
I distinctly remember, because I can even tell you what channel it was on. It was on channel 37. So you got Cartoon Network. I want to say Cartoon Network was seven till seven, and then TNT was like 7 till 2 in the morning, something like that.
It just showed old movies though, in addition to Nitro.
Nitro was I think one of the only like new things it was showing.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, but we got the infamous Friday Night Wars at that time, because did it not go up directly up against Raw on Sky One?
I don't think it went up directly. I think it was always on about 7 or 8 o'clock at night, and then Raw was on about 9 or 10.
Oh yeah, yeah. At this time, Raw was still shown at 5 p.m. on a Friday. They didn't start showing Raw late until probably when Raw is War started.
Yeah, because we didn't get Raw until like I want to say late 95.
Yeah, late 95. Yeah.
So that was in the King and Vince blue screen era. Well, get us, Rory. We are sounding proper old here.
Yeah, we are, aren't we, Ben? It's not good.
That's because we are. Yeah, that's why, because we are.
Yeah. Speaking of proper old, the WWF did have a Hall of Fame this year. Does anyone want to take a stab at, or just want me to tell you who was in the class of 1996?
96, God.
Oh.
No, I can't think of many at all. Yes, I can. Vince McMahon Sr.
Vincent J. McMahon was in the Hall of Fame this year, inducted by Shane McMahon. Shane, that must be one of his very first appearances, like not being a referee.
When did old James Dudley get inducted?
95, I think.
94
or 95. Yeah, it was one of the ones. 95, because it was done at the King of the Ring that year, not WrestleMania.
Argentino Rocker?
Nope.
Oh, pass.
So you had Baron Mikhail Scicluna.
Wow.
Oh, him.
Yes, who could join the European Super League, because I believe he's Maltese. Also joined the European Super League, Captain Lou Albano from Abruzzo, Italy. I believe.
Everybody's favourite.
Everyone's favourite, yeah, that big fat slabby big. Oh, I've been waiting so long to say that. Jimmy Snuka. Oh, fucking murder of a class this year.
What did he do, honestly?
I know. What did he really do? Johnny Rhodes. Killer Kowalski, Pat Patterson in this year, and the Valiant Brothers. Fucking, see if the Valiant Brothers includes Jimmy. I'll be fucking fucking Jimmy Valiant, man, I can't escape him.
Follows you everywhere.
I know, follows me around like a fucking bad smell. The night before, we're just coming on to it, is WrestleMania season after when the Hall of Fame's on. The night before was the Slammy Awards. 18 different Slammy Awards. I'll let you guess who won them. I'll quickly run through them. You can just give me a guess who won. So number one, best buns.
Sorry.
Yep. Best slam and jamming entrance.
Slam. Soviet. Oh my god.
Jesus Christ. 95.
So from the time period from WrestleMania 11 to 12.
Slamming, jamming. Fatu.
No, it was Shawn Michaels.
Of course.
Put a fork in him. He's done award, i.e. the best finisher.
Pearl River Plunge.
Nope. The Sharpshooter. Bret Hart's version, I must say, not The Rock's.
That new for 95 move, yeah.
Okay. Crime of the Century.
Karma stealing Undertaker's urn.
Vader's assault on WWF President Gorilla Monsoon.
Well, that's one of the best things ever.
Yeah. new sensation of the squared circle. We've mentioned them partially already.
Ahmed Johnson.
That's fair enough.
I'm talking and I can't shut up for the Biggest Mouth Award.
Ahmed Johnson, no.
What's he talking? Jim Cornette?
Jerry Lawler.
Oh, okay.
Best Threads.
Was this one of Owen's two slammies?
It was not. This was Shawn Michaels that won this one. The Blue Light Special for Worst Dresser.
They would have given that. That would have been like a rib against somebody.
Rory may have mentioned them.
Oh, Jim Cornette.
Jim Cornette, motherfucker. WWF's greatest hit. I don't know how even to describe this. It's just like a moment.
Was it when Jarrett hit Ahmed at the Rumble?
Oh, that would have been a very, very good choice. It was the Undertaker drags Diesel into the abyss. But I prefer your option.
Okay.
Minds Behind the Mayhem for Manager of the Year.
Cornette or Hans Moleman, no.
Oh, it's Sonny, it was.
Ah.
The Lifetime Achievement Award.
96. Gorilla?
Oh, if I tell you it was mentioned in an REM song.
Andy Kaufman.
Fred Blassie.
Oh, of course.
Most embarrassing moment. Speaking of Andy Kaufman.
Something Jerry Lawler kissing his own feet.
It certainly is. squared circle shocker.
Now, would this be where Owen won it for the Enziguri?
It was. Shawn Michaels collapses and Owen Hart accepts the awards for making Shawn collapse, and he did it all by himself. Master of Matt Mechanics.
Excellence of execution.
Shawn Michaels.
That one.
Best music video.
You Start the Fire, Bret Hart.
Bret Hart, yep. US West Match of the Year.
Well, I would want to say it'd be the ladder match from SummerSlam, but it won't be.
Oh, you would be correct.
Oh, okay. That's pleasantly surprised me.
Which WWF champion, past or present, in attendance is Hall of Fame bound?
That could be a double buff. The Hitman?
Was the Hitman.
I was going to say, there'd be a few of them.
Yeah, and the final one, the leader of the new generation.
Oh, they give that to Shawn, won't they?
They give that to Shawn, yes. Whose crowning moment was the night after at WrestleMania.
We discussed, that's one of my favourite things about me. I can't just rip on that match.
I think we were all very much similar. At 1 hour, 1 minute, 56 seconds, the longest match in WrestleMania history, yes. Alongside two matches after, at 1 minute for 39, the Ultimate Warrior beat Hunter Hearst Helmsley in one of the shortest matches in WrestleMania history.
Although some people might say that Roman and Triple H from 32 was longer, but we can't confirm or deny those reports.
still going for 5 years later.
Mania's a tough one, isn't it? I actually tried to watch it about a year or so ago. I only got midway through. I probably do need, if I'd have prepared, imagine that, I could have rewatched it. maybe we'll do a deep dive into it, maybe a live watch or something at some point in the future. But WrestleMania 12 is a bit, I remember owning on VHS around this time, and maybe because I wanted to see the Iron Man match because we didn't get it on Sky or anything at the time. But God, 12's a tough one. I've seen it ranked really quite low before, but I'm looking at the card right now, I'm thinking that's actually quite compact, and there's not a hot, whatever you might think about the Iron Man match, but there's not a whole lot of chaff on here, and there's not too much fat on it, and it's a lean 240, and there's always something going on. I think it stands towards what you think about the Iron Man match and the undeniable fact, that's a fact, that the Anaheim crowd are just dead throughout.
Yes.
They pop for the Warrior and that's it. They are just nothing in that whole show.
You've got to imagine, so Callum just said that. What was that like? So just 1 hour, 1 minute, yeah?
Not a kick in the ass off an hour and 2 minutes.
And Rory's just said the show was only 2 hours and 47 minutes, so... There's no facts to be had on that show.
No, it's
even, but they still. I mean, I'm saying that, but they still manage that, you know, whole pipe of gold dust bit. But you know, there should not be any fat on that show.
If you have that show anywhere else other than Anaheim, it might be regarded higher. If you have it in Texas or you have it in Chicago or something.
They're just terrible.
The Iron Man might have been the right match to have in front of the wrong crowd. Because you look at some of the things here, there's like somebody on, I'm just looking at the Wikipedia page, somebody has said it's a 3-star match for the first 40 minutes and the last 20 plus are easily 5 stars, which it could be probably in the right ballpark. And the Bleacher Report ranked it the 16th greatest of the first 30 WrestleManias, which that backs you up, Rory, and saying it's a difficult one to rank. It's a bit not middle of the road, but it's a difficult one to rank. It's not all time great, but it's certainly not all time awful.
Oh yeah, it's not a bad show by any means.
I watched our Christmas office special might be in order. Because then we will have wrapped this part of the project, so maybe we pencil in for 8 months' time a live watch of WrestleMania 12.
That's why you're a podcast. That's why you're a podcast legend, Rory.
Thinking ahead. He's thinking ahead.
That is why you are a podcast legend. So any other thoughts on WrestleMania? Because this one could go into next month, or we could talk about it more in depth next month, because it was on March 31st. And then obviously we're calling it now. We'll probably be watching this at Christmas time as well. so certainly we can move on from this one.
Yes.
Not all time bad, not all time good. And the first 3 months of 1996, I'm glad we focused on the wrestling, because the first 3 months of 1996 elsewhere in the world, we're talking about it before we came on, a bit grim. So next time out that we do this, it will be April, May and June, coming ever closer to Euro 96. Football's coming home, apparently. Yuri Geller.
Are we talking about football again? Okay, cool.
Football's coming home, apparently. Some absolutely brilliant stuff coming up in the world of music, sports, pop culture and wrestling. I can't think of anything big that happens in June.
No,
I can't think of anything.
June and July of 96 are very lean times in wrestling. Yeah, I can't think of much to go on there.
May, June, July, Rory, you might need to help us with that one. I think that's probably a good time, because we might need to strategise about what we're going to do for May, June and July for the wrestling. So that might be a good time for us to have a break. So yes, thank you for putting up with us for the first 45 minutes with the football chat. If you didn't and you did, you'd make use of the timestamp. You know, we're not going to hold that against you. Just thanks for staying with us for this next part. We've got a wonderful second half planned, so we're just going to kick it to a small break just now, and we'll see you on the other side. Nation wrestling fans, and I do use the term wrestling fans, I hope you're still with us. Welcome back to the second half of the Special Relations podcast, where I promise you we do talk about wrestling for the most part. I think there's only one thing to do, is just send it straight to Ben, because the last time I tried to intro something, we talked about football for 45 minutes. So Ben, just take the reins, my friend. Take this right off my hands, please.
I convince yourself that I can, because you know you're doing a fine job. Don't watch it yourself. So for the second half of our show this year, or this for the next few months, we've been watching some interviews that have been on something called the WWE. It says network here. I don't know if our American friends have heard of that, but we've got something over here called the WWE Network, and they have some interviews on there from wrestling stars past and present, and we are picking one of those interviews one a month to watch and review for you, and then we're going to watch a match related to that interview. I will let Rory explain what we were going to be watching, and B, what we ended up watching instead.
Thank you, Benjamin. So, everybody, I'm sure you're all champing at the bit. And the last 4 weeks just couldn't go quickly enough. Yes, you had two nights of WrestleMania, but come on, that paled into comparison to hearing your favourite special relations, discussing the interview between JBL and Jimmy Hart in the JBL Legends section of the network. Fear not, everybody. We will discuss it next month. That is a promise. Some might call it a threat, but no, we will be talking about it next month. But no, our plans were derailed, some might say for the better, by the announcement on April the 2nd of this year of the latest edition of the Broken Skull Sessions. It was teased on April the 1st, of course, by a little 10-15 seconds brief vignette in which the countdown clock and the famous countdown sound were playing. And this was reported in places like BR Wrestling, 411, under the very simple heading of commercial for Steve Austin's Broken Skull Sessions uses Chris Jericho's countdown music. And looking back now, it's quite amusing that nobody, and I very much include myself, made the connection. Well, just one day later, we got another 15-second vignette, this time of the camera pulling back, Austin with none other than Chris Jericho. Yes, and as soon as that was announced, sorry JBL, sorry Jimmy Hart, we had to discuss the Broken Skull Sessions interview, Stone Cold Steve Austin and that Chris Jericho, you know, the one out of the AEW, you know. Gentlemen, this interview aired for the first time 2 weeks ago, as this show goes out. 2 hours and 5 minutes on the network or on Peacock, whatever's your poison. We're going to get into it, into a lot of depth. I've got a lot of things to say about this interview. But Ben, just briefly, just in about another 45 seconds, 1 minute's worth, just sum up your quick thoughts on what you thought the interview between Austin and Jericho was going to be like before we really get into the 2 hours that all of us maybe managed to actually see. Ben, what were you expecting first off?
So what I thought I was going to be getting, I thought there was no way that AEW, Tony Khan, Cody Rhodes, whoever it was, would agree to him doing the interview if there wasn't some mention of AEW. But knowing the kind of guy Jericho is, I wasn't expecting him to like beat you around the head with it. And particularly because obviously it's on a WWE network, it's a WWE product, I didn't expect there to be it to run throughout the interview. What I expected was the greatest hits of Chris Jericho's career explained by Chris Jericho, because, you know, it's not the first Broken Skull Session I have seen. And that is the way Austin does things, is, the Austin or the producers or whoever very much has a template. You know, they use a guy's, you know, a guy or girl's best matches or match or matches, and they use as the time frame for the interview. So what I was expecting was basically Chris Jericho's greatest hits plus, you know, some AEW chat.
Callum, were you surprised when it was announced?
Yes, I most certainly was. It's just one of, like, we've seen more and more recently that, you know, the forbidden door has been kicked open, as they've been saying. But I just always thought there was one latch on that forbidden door that might not be able to be kicked down. and thank you. So yeah, when you, it's just one of these things that you saw the video, and then you do look at the date because it was around the start of April, and you're thinking, if they'd put this out yesterday, not one person would have believed it. It was very, very strange. But having watched it, it was very good. It was surprising that it didn't happen before. You've got to think that Austin and Jericho, I know they've got their own podcast, but I would have thought that they would have had each other on at some point and had this discussion. But I thoroughly enjoyed it. But yes, extremely surprised, I think, as everybody.
Yeah, I was surprised as well. I thought there's no way in hell that this would happen, especially in this current environment.
But does it not prove that the rival. And I know people think I'm being completely impartial, honestly. The people think that what people perhaps want to think that the rivalry, you know, maybe it isn't all that after all. Maybe what we were talking about in the first half of the show 25 years ago, probably both parties took it a little more seriously then than they are now. Really? I saw people saying to me, this is the equivalent of Sting turning up for an interview on Livewire in 97, which is utter bollocks, quite frankly. Not even remote close to that. I mean,
it's not quite the same. It's more like Paul Heyman, or sorry, Bruce from Connecticut phoning up Livewire. Yeah. I think the whole thing in the Monday Night Wars was the fact that Vince McMahon and Ted Turner hated each other. It was never about Eric Bischoff. Vince McMahon hated Ted Turner. Vince McMahon, if he knows who Tony Khan is, I'd be extremely surprised. And if he does know who he is, he's probably nonplussed about him, if I'm honest. Jericho said it himself, and whether or not I tended to believe him when he said that they're not, he even said that AEW don't see themselves as a rival. They just see themselves as an alternative. Mm. An alternative that their network just happened to put on against NXT on the night that NXT was on, because they knew it was a good night for wrestling, and they tried to take some of the audience away, as we've seen with both shows increasing in numbers. Shock horror, when you don't put two very good wrestling shows on against each other, people will want to watch both. Huh? Fucking shock horror. But yeah, there is no rivalry. People are just fabricating this in their own mind for their lust for the good old days to come back, and they're not coming back. And the sooner that people will realise that they're not coming back and enjoy the superb wrestling that you have on literally every night of the week, the better. And AEW certainly a part of that.
It's a simple thing, and I'll keep my point as simple as you can. You know, to Rory's example, in that example, you talk about the number one and the number two wrestling companies in North America in 97 and in 2021. The difference being the two in 97, the two companies were very, very close to each other in terms of ratings, in terms of money, in terms of wrestling talent, yada, yada, yada. That is not the case anymore. You've got a very, very clear number one and a company who, you know, they aren't a rival. They're an alternative. That's the difference.
Yeah, completely right. Anyway, I'm sure we'll come back to that again another day. I'll make sure of it, no less. But so, the 2 hours of the Broken Skull sessions, Steve Austin and Chris Jericho. Callum, I'll throw to you first, because there's a lot of in-depth stuff to get into here over the next 20, 25 minutes. But your opening thoughts, having watched the show, simple/loaded question. What did you think?
I thought it was really good. I was surprised at the amount of mentions that AEW got. Pleasantly surprised, I must say, because it would have been, if they didn't mention it at all, it's the elephant in the room. If he mentioned it once or twice, you think he's probably snuck it in under the radar. But it was, you can't now have a conversation with Chris about Chris Jericho's career without mentioning All Elite Wrestling. But they didn't dwell on the fact that is. They just started talking, and they talked about the great moments in Jericho's career, and we discussed it on the WrestleMania Summit ones, that Chris Jericho is not someone who is great at everything. He's not the excellence of execution, or he's not a Rey Mysterio high flyer, or he's not this, that, and the next thing. But he is good at almost everything you would need a professional wrestler to be. I think that's why, and he admitted it himself, I think. And the moments that you saw are why Jericho is so highly regarded. And I thought the whole thing was well done. There were some points where he was grating on me a wee bit, but overall you can't argue that I don't think you could watch that and say it was bad. And I'm sorry if either of you are going to say that. But from where I'm sitting, it was excellent.
I think it's going to be 3-3 on this one, Callum. Don't worry, Ben. Where do you sit on that?
So going back to the summit, and I know Callum said it, and I think a couple of other people said it. I think we very much underplayed Chris Jericho, like calling him this, you know, jack of all trade, master of not, you know, jack of all trade, master of not. And I think we basically undersold his ability. He is whether you want to admit, you know, whether you particularly like the guy or not, he's one of the most influential wrestlers of the last 25 years. That ain't me being a sweeping statement. That is a stone cold fact. Do you like what I did there, Rory? Good punning. But you know, whether it's just because I am an Uber Jericho fan, the 2 hours absolutely flew by for me. You know, none of the conversation felt forced between them. You know, they got the AEW chat out the way and they did all that. And then, like I say, we got into the greatest hits. You know, we got into the whole Goldberg situation. We got into the whole the countdown. We got into the beating the Rock and Austin in one night. We, you know, he covered everything. We'll get into detail in the set. The most interesting bit for me was when he was talking about the shedding of the Y2J character. That was the most fascinating and interesting bit for me. But I absolutely loved it. Probably the best of the Broken Skull sessions I've seen so far.
Yeah, I'll definitely agree with that. I thought it was, spoiler alert, keep it simple, I thought it was bloody excellent. A couple of days before it went up, WWE released a small clip from it, about 2 minutes worth, talking about his debut in August 1999, the Millennium Man and all that. And I actually tweeted after watching this. I said, well, okay, we know about this. I'm hoping that the interview itself doesn't dwell too much on things we already know a whole lot about. But so often the case, as soon as I hit submit on that tweet, I immediately regretted it. Because I do think as wrestling fans, sometimes we think/expect that everybody knows everything already, because we like to think, and it's definitely think, that we do. We know everything about every pro wrestler there is to know, inside leg measurements, every which way but loose. And we want to, or we like to convince ourselves that we want to hear something different on an interview. But really, if something different did come up, we'd be pretty shocked, because it might be something that we didn't previously know about. You see what I mean? The ultimate catch 22. And just because I know about Jericho's debut on Raw in August 99, just because you two know, just because many of our listeners know, how many of the hundreds of thousands of people who tuned in watching that on Peacock knew about it? I'd wager a very small percentage. I've both heard Chris Jericho and read Chris Jericho talking about the night he won the Undisputed title and was locked out of his hotel room and had to prove he held both belts and couldn't get any food and ended up eating a cold carpet-stained pizza at midnight in a lonely hotel room. I knew that story. I watched his Broken Skull sessions with my wife. She'd never heard that story before, and she was laughing her head off throughout it. So just because it, largely speaking, went over old ground, no. How can it be old ground if you've never heard it before? You see what I mean? Yeah, so even though I personally would possibly have wanted a bit more on his post-07 comeback rather than the Shawn feud and the Owen stuff, I cannot blame them for focusing on it. It would be wrong of me to do so.
But for every person that's heard, as you point out, for every person that's heard the carpet pizza story, you'll have a Mrs. Podcast legend who hasn't, but I had never heard the story, for instance, of he would call Paul Heyman to get a gig in ECW every week or every couple of weeks because he missed his chance the first time, or he flew himself to Los Angeles to be part of that big Antonio Inoki charity show to make sure he could get seen by WCW and stuff like that. So there was, it was a nice, almost like a variety show. It was, there was something, and there was stories in there for everyone, from your hardened fan who thinks they know everything there is to know, wrestling and Chris Jericho's career, and there was people for the non fans who had a chuckle at the guy's misfortune and having possibly the worst night of his life, the night that was meant to be the best night of his life when he won the title.
It was little things on that night where, you know, they revealed when I didn't know that he didn't know he was going to win the world title until about 2-3 hours beforehand. That's why there's no family or anything there, because she hasn't got a clue.
See, there you go. There's always something.
And I'm surprised, because I'm guessing you two knew the story about the whole when he went to Vince's mansion.
Yes,
I'd never heard that.
Yeah, it's in a lion's tale. But again, it doesn't matter. You know, you heard it for the first time. And even if you weren't hearing it for the first time, the way that Jericho told the stories, it was as if he was telling them for the first time. He was effusive, he was engaging, he was effervescent. It didn't feel it was just one more for the road, which was probably my one slight fear going in, that he thought, because let's face it, Jericho, even though we 10 minutes ago said it wasn't, he probably thought he really was being very subversive going on this show and putting a picture on Instagram of him in front of a WWE jet. Oh, look at me. So knowing what we know about Chris Jericho now, he probably was, but he wasn't. But no matter, he was telling these stories. You could see the light in his eye. And I think it helped that Austin was the one conducting the interview. And if I have one criticism about the Broken Skull sessions, it's Austin's constant interruptions. And again, in the clip they showed on the network where they were talking about, obviously, Jericho making his debut. And then he says, I have to do this thing with The Rock. And Austin chimes in, one of the best of all time. Yeah, thanks, Steve. Yeah, no, thank you. That was an important interjection that needed to be made. But, you know, other than that, he kept that to a minimum, at least in the edit that we got to see, which helped. He would ask a fairly generic question related to something pretty important in Jericho's career. Then Jericho would just riff on it for 6-8 minutes nonstop. And I think that's, Ben, why you say the show flew by.
Yeah,
it's because Jericho's responses flew by, and that is a massive compliment. He spoke for a decent long time about everything, but he was so up for it. He was so excited, so happy to get these stories across at a time where he easily couldn't have been. It really was a joy to watch. I couldn't believe, because we sat down to watch it about 6 p.m. on a Sunday evening. Couldn't believe when they finally wrapped and it was 8 p.m. Unbelievable.
He's a great talker. I don't just mean I don't mean a promo man. I mean a great talker. You could, he genuinely is one of those guys I could listen to all day. So what are my loves in life? So we've talked football tonight. Wrestling's obviously another one. Rock music and heavy metal music is another. And he's not just you know, he does two of those things, three things for a living, and is an encyclopedia on two of them things as well. He's knowledgeable. He's knowledgeable without coming across as a smart ass, and that's a very difficult, you know, combination to do, I think.
And he's very engaging as well. There's nothing worse than listening to somebody get interviewed and they're a wet blanket.
And not afraid to take the piss out of himself as well when needed.
Like, if you, again, another niche reference here, but if you remember, was it Meg Ryan on Parky?
Yes.
She came across as, like, she didn't want to be there. She clearly wasn't comfortable interviewing or talking in front of a crowd or in that setting. And it comes across, and you can find it on YouTube. So if to see what we're talking about, if you just Google Meg Ryan on Parkinson in YouTube, it'll come up. It's got fucking hundreds of thousands of views. It is one of the most uncomfortable and awkward bits of television, possibly in British television history. It was terrible. And you're looking at the polar opposite in Chris Jericho. He was so engaging. He wanted to, you could tell he wanted to be there. He was quite happy getting interviewed. And to the point earlier, I can't remember which one you made it. He would just say something and he would just talk for minutes on end. And it would never be, wasn't he was interrupting. He would just have a genuinely interesting story. Like, Steve Austin just said, right, we'll go forward to No Mercy 2008. And he's like, oh my goodness, No Mercy 2008. And just talk for 10 minutes about how he and Shawn Michaels didn't have anything to do. Like, they were meant to have a one-and-done feud, a one-and-done match on a pay-per-view. And then they both realised that it had nothing on the horizon for either of them. And then they just created this thing. And it is, in the post-Benoit time, in the doldrums that was the post-Benoit time, the WWE, they had one of the best feuds that they'd seen in a long time. And even still, it's excellent.
He talks doesn't he, about keeping a list of matches and, you know, so that's why he was able to recall things straight away. And, you know, that kind of thing, that kind of, I'm going to use the word, that kind of anality, that's not a word, I know, but it's where I'm going. You know, that could turn a lot of people off, but he's so engaging with it that, You don't tend to notice it. You're like, oh yeah, that's a good thing that he's kept such a record of all his matches. More people should do things like that.
Did you know that Steve Austin used to stand by the curtain and watch every single match on his own? And did you know that he was going to be US champion with Harley Race as his manager until Brian came up to him and said, "We need a finish"? Did you know he was dropped on his head once, was put out for a year? Did you know they wanted him to put over Brock with no build? So just forced out. He didn't mention any of those this time. I've got to say, that's another boon for Austin.
Yeah.
So, Callum, this has been a bit of a gush fest for the last 20 minutes. I think deservedly so. But I did pick up on what you said in the intros there. There were a couple of things that were grating. I think in the interest of fairness, you probably need to say what those were for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's really minor things because it was. I mean, we could talk for hours on end about how good this was. But I was I didn't have time to watch it per se. I was listening to it in work as if it was a podcast. Apart from the occasional times where they would show something I wanted to see, like the debut and stuff like that. But a lot of the stuff came back to. There was times it was just like, if I wanted to be a rock star, I would do this. And it's like I can't remember who he used. It was like, this was, you know, I'm pretending I'm Paul Stanley, or I'm pretending I'm Eddie Vedder, or I'm like, and not everything needs to come back to rock and roll music. Okay, I understand that it's one of your passions, but I'm not here to listen to you talk, basically shoehorn references of bands that you everything.
If you've read his books, I've got Jericho's first two books, especially his second one, Undisputed. He tries way too hard with the pop culture references, and it does make it a little bit difficult to follow. I think here with some smart editing made it a little easier to take, but he probably did need to be reined in once or twice. I think that's fair criticism.
But I think I might have noticed it more than anybody else because I was only listening to it, so I didn't have the visual cues on the screen and what was happening, getting distracted by that. It was just words going into my ears, and I felt I was picking up on that sort of thing. And it was, I wouldn't say it ruined it for me because it certainly didn't. I wouldn't even say it brought it down a peg or two, because again, it certainly didn't. But I did notice it. It was noticeable. Not grating might not have been the right word, but certainly noticeable to a point where it could have got annoying quite quickly.
There are a lot of things with Chris Jericho in general that, if you allow yourself to, you could get very annoyed with him. Annoyed is very, very mildly, if we look at some of his utterances in the last year or so. But this, on slightly less contentious ground, is just a Jericho thing, and it's the way he has always been. As they say in the game, if we had seen the whole Russia's footage of this, the full 3 hours or whatever it was, might have got even more, but I think they just have got away with it.
And
but
at the same time, I do appreciate the irony in it that he keeps shoehorning in references to stuff that he enjoys that maybe the average listener of his show might not enjoy. I am picking up on the irony of that, given what happened in the first half of our show. it's just... It was noticeable. It didn't want me to turn it off in any way. And one thing I did notice, sorry if I'm encroaching on one of your future questions, Rory, but Chris Jericho was acting in the same way that we may have had criticisms of the Sasha Banks interview, where she was bigging herself up, and Chris Jericho was saying, "I'm not a locker room leader, but I am, you know, I'm quite." I'm there to impart my significant knowledge, and he was, and this is the point where I became one of the best in the world. And Jericho's had more of a time to back it up, but certainly it's this. He was making the same types of claims that were Sasha Banks was getting criticism for, and I don't know, is that maybe, if you guys think, is that maybe just because he's had the longevity and has got a massive back catalogue to back it up across various different promotions and companies, or is it just horses for courses and more people tend to like Chris Jericho and he seems more likable?
I think it's more of a thing of people, and you know, you've got to have that kind, you've got to have that little bit of arrogance about you, you know, however that comes out. Even the most understated of stars have that little bit of arrogance about them, where you have to, if you're going to be the front man of a rock and roll band, guess what? You're going to be an arrogant son of a bitch, and you're going to, you know, you want people to see you posturing. That's what's going to happen. And I'm glad you mentioned Miss Banks, by the way, because I'm glad that in the last couple of months I was proven absolutely right on that front. By the way.
Yeah, you're probably right, because I remember opposite, undesirable to undeniable was the line from Cody Rhodes. You're not exactly undeniable, you're good. Are you as good as you think you are? Probably not, but more power to you for thinking. Because see, to your point, if you go out in front of that audience and think, do you know what, I'm pretty shit, and do you know what, you're probably going to put in a shit performance.
Whether you're an actor, whether you're a musician, whether you're a wrestling star, whatever form of entertainment you're in, you need to have that little bit of, like I say, that little bit of arrogance, that little bit of confidence about you. And some people project that better than others. Because you're not going to be able to do that. Otherwise,
you've got to. The term is escaping me, but it's, you've got to bank on yourself, or you've got to.
Like I said when we were talking about Sasha, it ain't cocky if you can back it up.
Yeah. Sorry, Rory, I've taken over your segment here.
So do you, in essence, very quickly before we go to our final segment, we can probably talk about it a bit more during what we're going to live watch, but Ben, would you recommend this one to the viewing populace?
Absolutely, and that I would say that whether you're a fan of Jericho or not, because like he's because of the way he talks and the stories he tells, yes, there might be the odd thing about him that annoy you as a person, but he's such a good storyteller that the 2 hours do fly by.
Yeah, it's, I cannot stress highly enough, 2 hours and 5 minutes doesn't even seem half of that. And time does fly when you're having fun. And everybody involved in the making of this was clearly having fun. Again, you can debate and discuss what kind of fun they thought they were having. I'm sure Jericho would try and tell you it was a lot more fun than of a very specific bent than everybody else. Just tell him in that respect to get over himself. But the thing I really loved about it is that you just talked about AEW in the first 3 minutes, that I thought was really, really sensible. Shut down all the people who were hate watching, in the hope that he wouldn't really mention it, so they would have something to moan about on Twitter, and went back to it for the last 15 minutes. I thought that was really sensible. And bookended by 1 hour, 40 minutes of just wonderful storytelling by somebody who's, you know, who's lived a very full life in the wrestling business. And I've seen people saying that they wanted it to be twice as long. I can understand that. Maybe we will get a volume 2 one day. I do hope we do. And maybe then we can look at things that haven't been discussed in quite as much detail. But I think this is the, almost, well, the possible exception, of course, of JBL talking to Jimmy Hart, the finest interview.
It's coming.
Callum, I'll let you have the final word on this one while Ben fires up what we will be watching next. So just bring it home on this one, this wonderful leading question again. This, what did you think of this wonderful interview with Chris Jericho and Steve Austin? Final thoughts.
Yeah, I think you've hit the nail on the head. I think it was wonderful. I thought it was it was a lot better than I thought it was going to be. Like you said, I thought it was going to be, we're just going to be rehashing old stories. And I came in the first night and I beat The Rock, and I had a promo battle with The Rock, and I beat The Rock and Stone Cold the same night. And you totally get it now becomes, you're hearing from the horse's mouth why he did the New Japan gig and why he felt a bit disillusioned with the WWE in the first place. Yeah, I'm glad he did talk about AEW and got it out the way, and I thought it was very interesting the way they did it. I thought it didn't become the focal point of the show. It was, they mentioned the elephant in the room, they got it out the way, and they started talking about these things that your average WWE Network user and new fans who might be coming across it on Peacock, because you've got to think, if you go into Peacock, you'll have a big picture of Stone Cold Steve Austin and Chris Jericho, and your lapsed fan or your average person goes, "Oh, I recognise them. Let's give that a watch." I think it was perfect for what they were wanting to do. I thought it was excellent. And if you've not seen it yet, anyone that's listening hasn't seen it yet, I think you'll probably know that I couldn't recommend this enough. It was excellent.
Highest recommendation. I think it's fantastic. Probably one of the best things on the network, I reckon, those 2 hours, 5 minutes. It was glorious.
Absolutely, yeah.
Maybe during the next 20 minutes I will. But of course, as is customary after reviewing an interview, Benjamin, we then watch a live... watch a live watch. There you go.
We
watch something on the network. There you go. Fucking hell, it's late.
we are both watching a live watch match. And we're helping... And we're helping Rory out by watching something from nearly 20 years ago. We are going back to Rory's War from May 21st of 2001. And it is the World Tag Team title match between Stone Cold Steve Austin and Triple H versus Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho.
Great choice. Give us a timestamp, that man.
I have got a timestamp of 1 hour 22 and 56 seconds.
Get there right now.
And
I really hope watching Peacock were able to do this, by the way.
I believe as of today, all of Raw is actually available.
Ah, yes, but can they fast forward?
What did you say it was, the 28th? 21st.
The chapter is, of course, the Tag Team Championship match.
Yes. Chris Jericho, Steve Austin and Triple H in tag team action.
Or if you are watching this on Peacock and you can't fast forward, press pause on your listening device. Just watch Raw for 1 hour, 22 minutes, 56 seconds. 2001, and then join back with us. There you go. Okay, welcome back. Right, but
he's not a podcast legend for nothing. That was seamless.
Even though he gets live watch and match mixed up. Right, gentlemen, are we ready?
We are ready.
Okay, Ben, as is customary, you count us in, my man.
Okay. In 3, 2, 1, play.
There is Steve Austin. See, there we go. Still the black trunk. Still the black jacket.
It'll never get old.
That's part of the problem, though, isn't it? Why is he still wearing a shirt with 100% whoop ass on? why hasn't he changed anything? Why is the glass still smashing?
100% corporate champion.
Why is he still saluting the crowd in the corner?
Like I said when we were talking about the interview, that was one of the most interesting things for me when Jericho was talking about like shedding the Y2J gimmick and shedding all the things that, you know, people might cheer. So he is the most hated heel in the company.
Mm-hmm. It's the old Jim Cornette line. If you're a heel turning face, you change nothing. If you're a face turning heel, you change everything. And this is why Steve Austin's heel turn didn't work the way it could. Obviously, I've only just started it in our timeline on wrestling 20 years ago. But here, jumping ahead a few weeks, the evolution still hasn't really happened. And it's said that one of the reasons Austin didn't go all the way with it is because he was spooked by the potential slash possible dip in that sweet, sweet merchandise money. I don't know how true or not that is, but I can see it.
He was just quite paranoid about everything, though, is it not? Has that not come out a lot later that he's just quite, not paranoid, but insecure about his whole, about his position? And maybe that had something to do with it as well. If he turns heel, then he's not got, he might not have this, he, as soon as he, if he turns heel and loses the belt, then he slips right down the card, just becomes another top level heel, as much as Steve Austin can be just another guy on the roster.
So, sorry, are we talking about Steve Austin or a president of Real Madrid? I'm sorry.
Steve Austin is Florentino Perez.
He wants that sweet, sweet merch money.
He does.
Well, what do you think of that one, Ben? What do you think of... Yeah, let's talk about it now. Austin's 2001 heel run in general.
I tend to agree that he should have changed his look, definitely. I know I say the black, you know, it never gets old, but if you either change the look or you get rid of all the things that made the fans cheer you. So he should have kiboshed the what stuff straight away.
But did the,
I don't know what was in 2002? Sorry, my mistake. Sorry.
Did the fans cheer him because he had black boots, black tights, the vest, or did they cheer him because he was Steve Austin?
Well, then the other problems in the ring with him, you know. The Triple H basically usurped everything.
Well,
until this night.
And I will be talking about that on Wrestling 20 Years.
And
ago.
It's no coincidence. It's no coincidence that Austin became a better heel once Triple H was out of the way.
Yes, I would probably agree with that.
Did they like each other? Like, genuinely, did they like each other? Because you hear that he allegedly didn't want to drop the belt to him at SummerSlam 99. You had that convoluted episode with Mick Foley, and it then becomes that Triple H usurps his heel turn, and when Triple H was meant to be the mega babyface, and then that all didn't work out because of what we're just going to see here. So I don't know what type of relationship these two guys actually had at this point in time.
I'm not sure now you mention it. That's something I might need to comb the sheets for.
Mm.
Preparation for my shows over the next few months. You know what? That's something I've never really thought about. It's a good question.
I mean, I don't know how to describe it, but obviously I'm watching this for the sound down, but you can feel that something's a bit off here in terms of, you know, the two established guys versus the two younger guys. You know, this feels, I mean, even without the sound, this feels like a big match, I think, is what I'm trying to say.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that.
This isn't just your regular tag title defense.
Now, see if the, right, so obviously we get the, and I was just going to say, you could have these guys at a four-way, and it could main event a pay-per-view easily, because you've got four guys at this point in time who are at the top of their game, for the most part. Was that going to be the way they were going for King of the Ring, and have these four guys as in a four-way? Or was that just changed because Triple H got hurt and then you just got...
I don't think they ever got that far.
Because King of the Ring, we saw an advert for it there. It's only about 2 or 3 weeks away.
He would have been doing something on King of the Ring, wouldn't he? With Mr. Lebeck. He'd have made sure of that.
Yeah.
I'm going to say yes. There you go. I'm also going to say this. That match doesn't end with Austin pinning him. I just want to just...
pinning Triple H?
Yeah. That's
no.
What did I even waste my breath saying now? There we go.
No.
I sort of like another Jericho. Yeah, you're right, Ben. You can just see it, can't you?
Yeah.
You really can.
It's like Jericho and Benoit know this is their chance. You've had a month and a bit of Undertaker and Triple H, which didn't Undertaker and Kane that didn't work.
Ugh.
So you've got, right after the Monday Night Wars is finished, you've got four guys that WCW didn't think were good enough.
Yeah, this is. That's what you call sticking it in the face, is it not? Yeah.
Eric Bischoff, what an eye for talent.
Nice. A nice shot there of Stephanie for Sean Kidd there.
Bischoff wasn't involved in creative, of course.
Oh, of course.
No.
Kevin Sullivan, eye for talent.
Whenever anything remotely bad is put in Bischoff's lap, I don't recall. Not that I've listened to many, many months, but I am reliably informed it hasn't changed one bit.
I've got a backlog of so many of Conrad's podcasts. I've not even bothered starting with the Angle one. I've heard so many bad things about it. I'm not going
I haven't listened to it yet. I haven't listened to a single one, but I still subscribe to it.
Have you not hit the Double J one yet, then?
No.
I always said that seriously, and then the laughter just started.
I can't say that I have. I mean, why would you want to listen to an inferior network of podcasts anyway? Like when you've got the quad of pods like we have here.
The quad of pods.
When you've got the quad of pods here, why do you need the septuplet of shite that Conrad Thompson puts up?
Did I? 60? That doesn't quite make sense, but okay. It did. No, just Callum, I still love you for that. So you all...
Oh, I see. You did that, yeah.
Oh, lovely little sequence here. God, Ben was funny. Let's talk about it. They don't talk about it on the network chapter point, so I'm going to. Ben, I suppose the answer is going to be yes, because you selected us to watch it here, but Chris Benoit matches, watching them unless you have to for any reason. Discuss.
Okay, I can watch them. It took me a while to watch them, and I totally respect people who don't want to watch them, but you can't exclude that part of history. You can't do it. You can, you know, and that might be me being too simplistic, and, you know, I'm not going to go with the Tim Capel line, but he's in these shows, and I think I said it in the Summit column, didn't I? He is my favourite wrestler of all time, and he will always be my favourite. And that's such a horrible, difficult position for me to be in as a wrestling fan, as a human being. When your favourite guy of all time is, you know, did what he did, and it took me so long to quantify the, you know, differentiate the two in my head, you know, Benoit the person versus Benoit the wrestler. And I've come to a decision where I can watch his matches. Do I get any enjoyment out of them? I don't really, but I watch them, and I've got to watch them as part of the show. I can't skip, if that makes sense.
What do you think, Callum?
Yeah, I think I'm a bit like everybody for the most part. I remember right before I went on holiday, I was in Florida when it all happened in 2007. Right before I went on holiday, I bought the WrestleMania 23 DVD and I watched it all. Watching it when I get back, I skipped the Benoit match. I just couldn't do it. I couldn't watch it. To the point that I didn't actually watch that DVD very much. It's still in the house somewhere. I will not skip a Benoit match if it's on a pay-per-view now, if I'm watching it. This live watch just now is the closest I've ever got to physically turning on a Chris Benoit match out of choice. Yeah. And even then, it's for the purposes of our show. I'll never go and search a Chris Benoit match because I want to go and see a Chris Benoit match, but I'll not turn it off now if it's on. But yeah, for the longest time, I couldn't even bring myself to watch matches that he was in. because you watch some, like we were watching, we did the two Mania summits, and you're watching them do the diving headbutt, and you're watching them do these things where he's landing on his neck, and you're just like, I get no enjoyment out of it, knowing what that eventually caused. But I will not, I can bring myself to enjoy matches, although I did have a painfully low mark on the angle match at 17. I can bring myself to enjoy them, but I can probably say hand on heart, unless I have a big change of heart, I'll never watch a Chris Benoit match out of choice. I'll never put on one of his matches just to watch a Chris Benoit match.
Yeah, I don't put any on through choice.
No, I don't either. It's particularly difficult for me and the rest of my Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast brethren, because very few of you who don't know, when we do the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, we do it in timeline, time machine mode, as if we are there. So right now we are in April 2001, and we don't know what Chris Benoit is about to do in 6 years' time. So when we're praising his matches every month, and we're nominating him for Best Worker of the Year, and I listen back to those shows after we recorded them, I'll be honest and say I do bristle a little bit. When I'm in the act of recording, I really do get into timeline mode. It's as if I really was there 20 years ago. So I don't notice it as much. But when I listen back to a show, when I'm editing it or when it's finished, or whether it's me or one of the other guys giving Benoit limitless praise for his work in the ring, I admit I do feel the goose pimples coming up once or twice.
I'll never judge.
And I do wonder, and we've never really heard back on this from listeners. I should try and ask people, really. I do wonder what they think of us doing that. And if people said, well, I think you're doing it wrong, I wouldn't necessarily have much of a case against their claims, really. I could understand why anybody would think that. I really could.
I've never had an issue with it, even from, obviously, from when they came into ECW and you started talking about them in ECW, so 95, so 2015, so it's been like 6 years, and I've never had an issue. Maybe I'm just the same. When I listen, I go into the timeline mode and just take it as I'm watching it in 2001, like myself. I've never had anything, and I'll never judge anyone for enjoying a Chris Benoit match or saying that Chris Benoit is the greatest ever, because there is a case to be made. But just for me, and not trying to sound holier than thou, I've just got a block for it, you know.
Yeah, I know. It's there isn't a right answer for this.
No, there's not.
I'm not going to come down on anybody like a ton of bricks who even say they can watch Chris Benoit matches of their own choice these days. I'm not going to criticise them for that. I might disagree with it. Not going to criticise them for it.
Because the whole point of wrestling is, it's entertainment at the end of the day. The whole point is that you enjoy it, and you enjoy what it's a variety show. You'll enjoy what you enjoy. And there's nothing, if Chris Benoit is up your alley and you've always loved Chris Benoit, and you can put that aside, because, and for many people, it is an escape. And if Chris Benoit matches are your escape, then all the power to you. You'll never get criticism from me on that one, but it's just...
Earl took him in a pounding there.
Earl get Chris Benoit's cock right in his face there accidentally.
They are going at an amazing clip in this match as well.
Yeah. I was about to say, boys, I hate to say, we might need to actually start watching this, because there's literally like 4 minutes left.
I think it's about to get good to you.
Lovely dropkick by Jiro. One of his best moves, that one, I think, is a missile dropkick.
Oh, he almost landed right in his head. Oh, Jesus.
See, that's it from Austin Selva. See, that's a bit more like it from Austin there. See, he was getting... That would he was saying right, but it just did. The big picture wasn't there with Austin's heel turn.
Get the wild eyed stare going.
That's good. But as if they had the sprinkles, but they didn't actually have the sugar mixed into the balls.
I think if we're watching this the best person that got Steve Austin over as a heel was Paul Heyman. He could, Paul Heyman, I think we all know, could sell ice to the Eskimos if that's not a non-PC thing to say. If it is, Rory, you can't cut it, it's fucking live, watch, bastard. if it is non-PC, then I do apologise. But Paul Heyman could, he could sell anything, and he like put Austin completely over the top on this heel run, even if Austin wasn't bought in it. Heyman certainly was.
What's happened here? We're still a bit not moving in time really now.
It's only when you see it in slow motion that it actually gets a bit disgusting. You can actually see it pop.
Yeah. And to still, you know, whatever you think of him, and long-term listeners of my other podcast will know what camp I fall in. I mean, he's finishing the fucking match here.
I think he's just said to him, you know,
this way. I mean, look at this right now. Look at that.
He's not just finishing it.
And he's taking a fucking Walls of Jericho on a, because at this point he does not know what's wrong. All he knows is his leg's fucked.
He's got the fan wrapped around his leg as well, for good measure.
I think for every criticism that you've got about one Triple H, and there are many, you can have the same amount of positives about him, or some positives. It's not as if the guy's the worst thing ever to happen in the world of professional wrestling. There is some positives about it.
He's saying a match with Chris Benoit, probably why.
I know. Yeah.
Perspective, everybody, you know. Yeah, Triple H knows he's screwed at this point.
Yeah.
But Jericho is taking it. Oh, he put so much behind that bulldog. Yeah, this match, what a corker.
I don't think I had this one on my GWWE.
No, I didn't. I didn't. But
made my top 50, I think, if I remember rightly.
Said he smugly. There we go.
But I have literally.
Yeah, but we all know this match is for God.
You were right. We were wrong. I've literally
not seen this match in 20 years, though. Like, it's almost. I don't think I've seen this match since it happened. And that's more fool me, I believe.
A lovely takedown by Benoit.
Oh.
Pace and the timing in this match. They haven't got to put a wrong.
That's what I'm saying. You've got to give Ben Warren Jericho credit for, like, you know, looking after Triple H the way he did.
Yeah.
I can see Benoit pulled him out the ring and just like gently rolled him out and popped him down.
Still gutted it out. I'm gonna, you know.
Well, that's still bloody good, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I get to see it again next month. Work.
But think about like what they had a 2-3 week run, and think of like they had this match as a banger. They have TLC on SmackDown about a week later, and then they have
you get Benoit week on Raw and SmackDown, don't you?
Yeah,
Benoit Austin week.
The match of 3 million German suplexes. So for a 2 week run, bloody brilliant. Well, I thoroughly enjoyed that.
Great call, Ben. Great call.
I did. Thanks. I have these little moments.
I'm still very much intrigued at what match we're going to watch next month for JBL and Jimmy Hart.
Me too. is that Jimmy Hart Mankow match? We're going to be all over it.
Oh, but with the 2.5 minutes, that's going to be a great live
watch. Yeah.
We'll introduce it and then it'll be finished.
I'm making myself pick a JBL match here. That's the sacrifices I make for you, dear listener.
We could have the one battle.
I think we all know what JBL match I am going to pick. So
from May.
Ben's got it. He's as ever, Mr. Locke has worked it out. Almost brings us to the end of our monthly cavalcade of goodness.
Yes,
ladies and gentlemen. But Callum. But
yes, I think it's time for us to set each other the challenge of talking our way out of this one. Now, for anyone who is a first time listener, Talk Your Way Out of This One has been liberally stolen from a British radio show, in the same way that Oasis stole Bang a Gong, Get It On. the I Like to Teach the World to Sing, that ilk, where it's not so much borrowing as opposed to just blatant stealing.
I think the phrase is talent borrows, genius steals, Callum.
Well, yes, I mean, I don't know what camp we fall into on that one. That's for the listeners to decide. So basically what we've got is 30 seconds and we have to, each of us will come up with a ridiculous statement in which our counterpart will have to talk about honestly for 30 seconds as if they were defending it. And it is going to be outrageous. The one we did before was Rory had to defend that the centre of the wrestling universe was Jacksonville, Florida. For those who know Rory, that's not something that he believes at all. And not one sinew of his body believes that. It's that sort of thing. All will become clear in a moment. So I think I started off the first time, Rory started off this time, so or last time out. So Ben, you will be up first. I believe you're asking Rory to talk his way out of something this month.
I am. Are you ready, Mr. McNamara?
As I will ever be, Mr. Locke. Who's got the 30 okay. seconds up?
30 seconds on the clock, please, Callum.
Okay, let me just get my trusted stopwatch out here. Gladiators ready. You will go on my first whistle.
Right. Okay.
So 30 seconds. I'll start the 30 seconds as soon as you finish your statement, Ben.
Okay. Only Fools and Horses is a mediocre sitcom at best, and Mrs. Brown's Boys is far, far superior.
Oh, Mrs. Brown's Boys, 10 million people can't be wrong, can they? I mean, you've got somebody dressing up in drag in the 21st century, making jokes about shitting yourself and pissing yourself and getting her lines wrong. And you have jokes about an old granddad in the corner who just says things, you know, about sex and funny stuff like that. And it's on every Christmas and it's just so wonderful, isn't it? But look at the jokes they have in there. They're about a woman falling over and people in her family being really quite odd and strange. This isn't about, you know, working class culture in the late 80s. It's just about... What's the guy's called? What's the episode again? I can, I'm out of time now, so I can say that. Brendan something, isn't it?
Brendan yes.
Carroll.
Yeah. Oh, I think Rory wins already, just for the fact that that must have pained him to fucking all hell.
Why do you think I picked it?
So from now on, I think we're just making up the numbers now.
Let's see. Because it's me to you now.
Okay.
Ben, do you want to get the time up? Have you got that?
Give me 1 minute, gentlemen. Get my stopwatch going. This is really exciting listening for everybody.
Gives them a breather after that one, they need it.
Well, that's true. Okay, ready when you are, sir.
Right then, when I finish asking the question, Callum will have 30 seconds to defend the following. The European Super League would be... Sorry again. The European Super League would have been a great idea if the Highlanders were invited.
Well, the Highlanders, any Highlanders, I mean, Inverness, Caledonia, Thistle, Ross County, Robbie and Rory, the man who on WrestleMania weekend managed to get himself fired because he stupidly went to an Impact show. I mean, who doesn't? I mean, the Highlanders deserve a shot. I think they're still owed a tag team title shot from one tag team turmoil in 2007. I mean, what better way to redeem that? It's like Money in the Bank. They're going to go to Florentino Perez and Joel Glazer and just say, right, we're cashing in. Get the referee.
Not bad. That's very good. I like the fact you pulled actual Highlanders out. I never expected anything less, Callum, to be honest with you.
And you remember the names.
I know, I don't know where I pulled that one from. I remembered Robbie, and I think as soon as I somehow from the deepest depths of my brain, I managed to get Rory out. Obviously for obvious reasons, you know.
Where does he pull these things from, everybody? Very good indeed, Callum, very good. Right, so you're going to wrap up now with Benjamin, I believe.
Yes.
And I have my finger on the clock for as and when.
Perfect. So, Ben, talk your way out of this one. I'm glad I fell asleep during the main event of WrestleMania 37 Night 1 because Sasha Banks and Bianca Belair bored the shit out of me.
Well, I mean, who honestly really wanted to see that as the main event? It was, yeah, I mean, Bianca Belair is nothing. Sasha Banks, what has she really done, honestly? I was so, so glad I fell asleep and I conveyed the mutant's thoughts through my sleep pattern and my sleep apnea that I'm so glad you guys got to hear that because it wasn't like anything really important or historical happened in that match.
Well done, that man.
Oh,
because all you have done for the last 2 weeks after watching that match is raved how good it was.
I don't just fall asleep during any old thing.
For anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, please go back and watch the clips. Matt Souza has done an excellent job of going back through the night one of WrestleMania and night two and clipping everything on the Twitch feed. So twitch.tv/placetobenation. Go in there and just listen to the carnage that was the Place to Be gang doing WrestleMania on both nights with a special appearance from one podcast legend. So excellent stuff. I don't know how to pick his.
I think it's one of those ones we've all done very well there.
I think we did.
You've all done very well. Old Mr. Grace from Are You Being Served? Another reference there for most of our listeners.
As I say, our target references tonight have been off the chart.
Well, it's a target reference that I don't even get because I think Are You Being Served was off the air before I was born. I'm going to pull a Logan one.
I'm giving you. He didn't get to see that main event live, and he's atoned for it A by watching it since and glowing over how good it was, and for 30 seconds saying that it was bad. I'm giving. So we've all got one win each. That's nice, isn't it?
How did that happen?
Oh, it's going to be a battle royale next one.
Plus glory, my friend.
I can't. I think we should have another office Christmas party at one point and just do, like, just get everyone to do it. Especially if Sean gets to the stage. Sean and Logan get to the stage that we're at by the time the main event came on at Christmas, just there, trying to piece together a proper.
I could think of two questions I'm going to ask Sean under this. Gentlemen, I think it is time to call it a night. Ben needs to get to sleep after all.
Absolutely, yeah. I've got to get some sleep. Yes.
Excellent show as always, gentlemen. So Ben, since you're the one that's desperate to get to his bed, we'll go to you first. What have you got? You're on at least half of the quad of pods, so let us know what you've got coming up.
I'm not desperate. Okay, so what we've got coming up, we have got a brand new episode of Wrestling's Chicken Salad here on the wrestling feed where we are going to be watching Backlash 2005. That is what Logan's picked. That is what we're watching. I'm also here on the first edition of Making Mount Rushmore here on the Wrestling Network. I'm on the Pop Experience Popcorn Chicken Salad. We'll be back. Sean Kidd has the pick. I'm not sure what we're going to be watching. Yes, but that is going to be episode number two. Also, the Making Mount Rushmore, or as I like to call it, the Steve Riddle Burial Pod, where, yes, we talk about 90s action films and somehow one of the panel hasn't seen Terminator 2 Judgment Day. I don't quite know how that works, but there we are. Me and Miranda will be back around at some point with Telly T. And I'm trying to think, Highway to the Impact Zone, I'll be on that as well. I'm watching some 2004, early 2005 Impact as we speak.
Excellent. So many. If you listen to... By the sounds of that, if you listen to a pod within the next couple of weeks, on any day, chances are you'll hear Ben with his excellent insight, and I mean that with no sarcasm whatsoever.
I wouldn't go that far. I would not go that far.
Rory, we have discussed at least one of your shows in a bit of depth earlier on, considering where we're almost in timeline. But let us know what you've got going on in the coming weeks and month.
So here in the Place to Be Nation Wingding, you can hear me every month on senior video. Or at least you could. I have yet to discuss this with the big boss, but I'm going to tell all of you people first. Senior video might be undergoing a little bit of a hiatus for the next couple of months, because the whole purpose of that show is that we would watch something on the WWE Network's Home Video Classics section. And I do believe that as far as the timeline of when this show goes out is concerned, Home Video Classics has not yet been deemed important enough by Peacock. So we'll have a little bit of a discussion with Scott in a couple of days' time. But even if you don't hear senior video over the next month or so, it will not be gone for long. But who knows? Maybe I'll surprise you. Where, of course, you can hear me is the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast. Coming up will be, well, some very, very different shows in addition to WWF being the only game in town. And of course, every single month we will be taking you through the World Wrestling Federation in full timeline as if we were 20 years ago. Many, many more shows. I suppose you could call it the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast network, if you will. I strongly recommend you keep it locked to the Twitter account at Wrestling20YRS for all the news that might entail. Until then, though, do go back and check out the hours of material that we have available for you for March 2001. The fall of WCW, we've got a preview show for WrestleMania. We've got the simulcast between the final Monday Nitro and the Go Home Raw, and a 3-hour, 16 minutes, of course, review of WrestleMania 17. All of that is currently available for you on the Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast feed, wherever you get your podcasts. But in a couple of weeks' time, in addition to our regularly scheduled programming, maybe a few other things as well. So, as they say in the game, keep them peeled.
The Wrestling 20 Years Ago podcast, often imitated, never duplicated.
Except no imitations.
We'll just let that one breathe there for a second. Contentious point again within on the pre-show, yes. But I said it last month, Rory, but or did I say it last month? No, I couldn't have. The WrestleMania 17 episodes were fantastic. I did like the seamless coincidence that it was 3 hours and 16 minutes that your WrestleMania 17 review had, but excellent stuff. I say that I should just get a soundboard. Excellent stuff from the Wrestling 20 Years Ago network. What's that his name? Ooh, fancy. Mm-hmm. Only the best podcasts get a network. For myself, we have actually announced that as quickly as we announced a very European Super League, like as quickly announced as we announced we were going away for a short time, NWA Crock and Roll will be back soon. We're actually recording on Monday after you hear this, and we will be looking at some hidden gems from two shows on hidden gems from Crockett Stars that we've missed over the year that we've been doing it. So listen out for or watch out for that coming on the network, the Wrestling Network. I've also been penciled in to do the Evolution of podcast with Andy. We're going to record that at some point, and that'll be with you as soon as possible. Other than that, from myself, there's twitch.tv/placetobenation and placetobenation, all one word, on YouTube. Please listen out for that. I've been saying this for ages, but that's me now handed in my last piece of coursework, so more regular stuff will be coming onto the YouTube and the Twitch, as Bret Hart would say. In addition to all of us, make sure you keep your eyes peeled for everything that drops on the Wrestling Network. You've got Making Mount Rushmore Wrestling Edition, as Ben said. You've got a thing on TV where they did a wrestling crossover episode looking at WrestleMania 2, Extreme Resurrection. I politely point you towards that with Grenade and Mike Cook talking about the debut of CM Punk and sort of the strange times at the start of the ECW relaunch on WWE television. You've got everything, all the great pods on the Pop Experience, the Jenny Position, the North-South Connection feed, and of course Glenn and Scott Butler's spectacular journey through music and films on the Non-Toxic Fanboys podcast. So that's all of our brother, sister and friend feeds on there. And don't forget search PTBW on tpublic.com, and that is where you will get all your merchandise from all of your favourite podcasts on the Wrestling Network. And if you're not on that show, is it really, if you're not on that store, are you really a Wrestling Network show? I'm not sure. Ben, you might need to answer that one for me.
Now.
No,
I'll set Hank on you, so don't get like that.
I'll take that back. Thank God that international travel's banned just now, or Hank would be all over my ass, as the kids say. but yes, check everything out there. And yeah, be sure just to like, subscribe, rate, everything. Just search Place to Be Nation on any social media. You'll probably find us on or everything. Just... all the logos will likely be the same. If you find something that's got a questionable logo, don't, because you're endorsing somebody else. It's not us. But yes, I'll stop rabbiting on now, because I've done that enough for the past 2.5 hours. But we will be back next month for more rabbiting on for 2.5 hours next month, and we will see you then. You don't have to.